to turn back the clock and say, let's throw this away and go back how it was, the good old days. The good old days weren't that good.
Lawmakers in the state house vote against repealing the criminal justice overhaul. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Monday, November 6th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, the federal government reviews all aspects of the state's controversial Ambler Road project.
That can range from, you know, what you think of as natural resource issues to economic and socioeconomic benefits or concerns.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
4 out of 5 Alaskans addicted to heroin started by using prescription opioids. Common opioids include hydrocodone, oxycodone, morphine, fentanyl, and codeine. Safely getting rid of unused opioid medications prevents anyone from taking them without permission, which could endanger them and lead to consequences with law enforcement. Find out more at opioids.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
The Alaska House has rejected a repeal of last year's criminal justice overhaul. Representatives voted 13-27 on Saturday against an amendment to Senate Bill 54. It would have repealed most of the law that lowered jail terms for many crimes. Alaska Public Media and KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman reports on the debate.
Anchorage Republican Representative Chuck Kopp says SB 54 addresses many of the concerns that police and the public have raised about last year's law, Senate Bill 91.
It remains to be seen if our political process can handle the level of complexity and the media circus that often accompanies it to solve problems that are this difficult, that don't fit on a bumper sticker slogan.
Wasilla Republican Representative Kathy Tilton sponsored the amendment. Tilton says the legislature should return to the laws that were in place before SB 91.
What I do know is that the people of Alaska do not feel safe.
Anchorage Republican Cherise Millett voted to repeal most of SB 91. She says Alaska can't compare the law with what other states have done because other states spent more money up front to rehabilitate offenders. She says there should have been more of an emphasis on public safety in writing the law.
That goes hand in hand with lowering recidivism and making rehabilitation available, but through the lens of let's make the public safe, do no harm.
Anchorage Democrat Ivy Sponholz voted against the repeal amendment. She listed many of the changes in SB 54.
Theft in the second degree, we fixed it in SB 54. Lightest sentencing in the nation for C felonies, we fixed it in SB 54. Violation of conditions of release problems, we fixed it in SB 54. Investing in addiction, we're doing it.
Fairbanks Democrat Adam Wohl also voted no. He says the state runs the risk of having to build another prison if it continues to do the same things that led to a high rate of repeat offenders.
To immediately go back, to turn back the clock and say, let's throw this away and go back how it was, the good old days. The good old days weren't that good.
12 minority caucus Republicans supported the repeal amendment, as did majority caucus Republican Gabrielle Ledoux of Anchorage. On Sunday, SB 91 opponents took to social media to criticize the 27 House members who voted against the repeal amendment. A post encouraged Alaskans to vandalize the 27 lawmakers' cars and said, quote, it's fair game to shoot thieves on the spot. The post prompted a statement from Speaker Bryce Edgman on the House floor.
Any sort of suggestion of retaliation, for lack of a better word, against any member of this body from anybody in the general public will be dealt with swiftly and immediately.
Edgman said he forwarded the post to the Capitol's chief security officer, who contacted the Alaska State Troopers. A spokesman for the troopers says an investigation into the matter is ongoing. The House was in recess through most of the day on Monday, as members prepared more amendments to SB 54. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
After a 2-hour manhunt and a citywide lockdown by Sitka police, officers arrested 35-year-old Nathan Leask Saturday evening for allegedly shooting another male. According to court records, Leask was charged with 1 felony count of assault in the first degree and 1 misdemeanor count of assault in the fourth degree. KCAW's Catherine Rose reports.
At 5:40 p.m. on Saturday, the Sitka Police Department received a call that a shooting occurred on a commercial fishing boat in Eliason Harbor. Officers arrived to find a man with a gunshot wound to the thigh and a woman uninjured. According to an SPD press release, Nathan Leesk entered the vessel occupied by the victim armed with a handgun. An altercation occurred, and during the fight, Leesk's firearm was discharged. Leesk then fled the scene armed. An hour after the initial call, SPD received word that the shooter was inside the Blatchley Middle School pool area, though that later proved to be untrue. According to Police Chief Jeff Ankerfeldt, school staff received information from a third-hand source that a shooting had occurred. As a precaution, staff activated a lockdown procedure and evacuated the school. Police arrived at the scene and searched the area, but Leesk was not there. According to the press release, at no time was there a man with a gun in the school. Officers searched multiple locations over the course of 2 hours and imposed a citywide lockdown. They advised all residents to stay indoors. They ultimately zeroed in on Leesk at an undisclosed home address. According to Ankerfeldt, Leesk surrendered to officers after negotiations over the telephone. He was in police custody by 7:30 p.m. The male victim, whose name has not yet been released, was medevaced to Seattle for treatment. Leesk is currently being held in Sitka jail with a bail set at $100,000. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Catherine Rose.
The Bureau of Land Management is taking the lead on an environmental review of the state-proposed Ambler Road. The controversial project would punch an industrial access road from the Dalton Highway west to the Ambler Mining District. The proposed 211-mile road already faces substantial opposition from many area residents. BLM Central Yukon Field Office Manager Tim Lamar says his agency is charged with looking at a full range of issues in drafting an environmental impact statement.
That can range from, you know, what you think of as natural resource issues to economic and socioeconomic benefits or concerns.
The Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority is shepherding the Ambler Road project for the state and has applied for a right-of-way to cross a mix of lands, prompting the EIS review. Lamar says it covers areas including Gates of the Arctic National Park and Preserve.
Approximately 61% of the route would pass through state lands, 15% would pass through Native Corporation lands, and the other 24% would pass through federal lands. About half of that would be managed by the BLM and the other half by the Park Service.
Lamar says 11 scoping meetings are being held in communities along the proposed Ambler Road route, as well as in Anchorage and Fairbanks, through the end of January. The first meeting is November 13th in the village of Alakakit, a Koyukuk River community which opposes the road. The BLM review schedule calls for a draft EIS to be released in March 2019, followed by another public comment period, with the final EIS for the Ambler Road due out in December of 2019. Leaders of villages in the upper Koyukuk River region are exploring the possibility of joining or creating a borough before resources are developed in the area. The Fairbanks Daily News Miner reports former Alakakit First Chief P.J. Simon says it's inevitable that copper and other resources in the northern Alaska region will be developed, so the communities want to cash in before that happens. Simon says creating or joining a borough could lead to tax revenue to fund infrastructure projects, jobs, and schools. He has requested annexation into the North Slope Borough for Alakakit, Alatna, and other villages. He says he has also considered annexation into the Northwest Arctic Borough. The leaders are examining the feasibility of creating a Yukon-Koyukuk Borough. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a proposal to increase wolf trapping on Prince of Wales Island.
There's a long history of being able to trap fur animals such as wolf.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Did you know while exposed to secondhand smoke, every breath you take can damage your heart? Cells lining blood vessels become swollen and inflamed. Plaque builds narrowing blood vessels and clots can form, robbing the heart of oxygen. Exposure to secondhand smoke increases your heart disease risk by up to 30%. It's your heart protected. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline, 1-800-QUIT-NOW.
The Alaska Aerospace Corporation will establish a subsidiary to handle its out-of-state services. KMXT's Kayla DeRoche has more.
AEC conducts rocket launches from the Pacific Spaceport Complex in Narrow Cape on Kodiak Island, and its corporate offices are in Anchorage. It's contracted with both the U.S. Missile Defense Agency and private businesses. It's also provided its services to a company called Rocket Lab in New Zealand. President and Chief Executive Officer Craig Campbell says that's one of the first contracts AEC will transfer when it forms Aurora Launch Services.
So the board has felt that if we're going to, as a commercial business, generate income and do it outside of Alaska, that we should probably have a subsidiary that does that actual work. So that way it's not actually state employees that are now working in other states and other countries.
He says Aurora's focus over the next 3 to 5 years will be launches from Alaska and any continued work with Rocket Lab, but AAC is also looking at an equatorial site so they can launch near the equator. He says they're considering Hawaii or Saipan. Campbell also says they're looking at partnering with developing spaceports, possibly in Georgia, Texas, or Scotland.
So there are a number of other places looking at developing spaceports, and we think we could probably provide a very competitive proposal how using Aurora Launch Services for their launch services at those locations would be very beneficial to them, as well as giving us more business for Alaska.
Campbell says while AAC remains a state corporation, it hasn't received state funds since 2014. He says spaceports should operate on a commercial basis, like airports.
They charge fees for their services. They contract out for different things being done at their facilities. And so what we're trying to do with Alaska Aerospace is show that we can lower costs, provide better services, more flexible services by operating under a commercial model than under a government model. And Aurora becomes a very important part of that.
He says they're filing the paperwork for the subsidiary this week. In Kodiak, I'm Kayla DeRoche.
Registration for the 2018 Kuskokwim 300 Sled Dog Race has been open for a month, and so far 13 mushers have signed up to compete. Among those on the list is last year's champion, Pete Kaiser of Bethel, who won the last three K300s. Other big names racing in this year's K300 include Jeff King, Yor Lethsef Olsom, and Jason Mackey. Mackey recently withdrew from the 2018 Iditarod due to the Iditarod Trail Committee's handling of the doping incident with Dallas Seavey's sled dog team. Mackey also stated his one major sponsor for that race dropped him. 2018 K300 mushers are competing for the same amount of money as last year. The total purse amount is $150,000, with $25,000 of that going to the winner. One change in this year's race is a musher limit of 30 teams. Once 17 more mushers sign up, the registration period is closed. The 300-mile race from Bethel to Aniak and back is set to begin January 19th at 6:30 p.m. Bear baiting on federal lands in Southeast may be allowed next year if a proposal by a regional subsistence advisory council is approved. The council also recommended ending a requirement that traps be marked with identifying numbers. Both practices are already allowed by the state. Mike Bangs, chair of the Southeast Alaska Subsistence Regional Advisory Council, says the council felt it should match hunting and trapping rules with the Alaska Board of Game when those rules are less restrictive.
It basically just aligned the state's regulations for bear baiting, and they've been doing it, and it's been an ongoing thing. So it really didn't change anything except that subsistence hunters can now use bait for bears where it just wasn't on the books in the Federal Register.
In other action, the council rejected a proposal to reduce the number of deer that can be taken under the federal designated hunter program. The program allows a hunter to take deer on behalf of another eligible recipient. Advisory councils in Wrangell and Petersburg alleged that some hunters were abusing the program and taking too many deer. But the council staff wrote there are no conservation concerns for the deer population. It also said the proposal could add unnecessary restrictions to traditional hunting practices.
There wasn't any proof that there had been abuse, so we went along with the recommendation to oppose it until we find out more about what the abuse is. It sounded more like a law enforcement problem.
The regional council's recommendations are non-binding. They still need to be ratified in April by the statewide federal subsistence board before going into force. Southeast Alaska's Subsistence Advisory Council has recommended increasing the subsistence quota for wolf hunting and trapping on federal lands on Prince of Wales Island. KTOO's Jacob Resnick reports.
The Southeast Alaska Subsistence Regional Advisory Council disregarded advice from its own staff to recommend upping the wolf harvest quota on Prince of Wales Island. Vice Chair Kathy Needham of Juneau said that island residents who qualify for federal rural subsistence rights, as well as tribal organizations, had brought the proposal to the council.
Trapping of wolves has been a historic opportunity for rural residents on Prince of Wales Island. Not just rural residents, but also tribal entities. So there's a long history of being able to trap fur animals such as wolf.
This false estimate of Alexander Archipelago wolves, a distinct subspecies of the gray wolf, was 231 animals, allowing a harvest of 46 wolves, or a fifth of the population. The council is recommending the quota be increased to 30%, which, using this year's numbers, would have been 69 wolves. Any hunting or trapping of wolves on the island is already controversial.
This population has been petitioned to be listed under the Endangered Species Act twice, and it's also involved in some litigation.
That's Bruce Dale, director of the Alaska Department of Fish and Game's Wildlife Conservation Division. He wrote the advisory council saying underreporting of wolf kills was an issue on the island. He said there are also concerns that the level of killing is unsustainable. State biologists believe the wolf population is rising, Dale said, but it's too soon to raise the quota.
We'd like to slow the growth a little bit, but we don't want to cause a decline or even level it off until we have a management plan in place.
Needham admitted there are known unknowns.
What is unknown in this whole process is what a sustainable or carrying capacity for wolves on the island is.
The advisory councils were created in the 1990s to represent the interests of local hunters and trappers on federal lands. Needham says that's what the body is doing.
If you talk to local knowledgeable trappers on the island, 230 is getting on the high end of that population. And so being able to provide for the harvest of more animals is something that they would like to be able to exercise. And so we're responding to that.
The regional council's action followed hours of testimony and a 9-2 vote. Its decision isn't binding, but serves as a formal recommendation to the statewide federal subsistence board, which meets in April. In Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, taking pride in its strong ties to Alaska's communities and in the 40 years of Alaska operations. Ensure the vitality of public radio by including it in your estate planning. Together, we build a sustainable future for quality media. Thank you.
Do you need health insurance but think you can't afford it? Alaska's health insurance premiums are going down for 2018. If you need insurance or currently have insurance through the individual market, be sure to shop at healthcare.gov between November 1st and December 15th to confirm that you have the plan that best meets your family's budget and coverage needs. For local assistance, call 1-844-PLANS-AK. This message sponsored by the Alaska Division of Insurance.
For the 20th year in a row, Dutch Harbor has been recognized as the largest fishing port in America. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's Ned Sear says Unalaska's port held on to its longtime title easily, hauling 770 million pounds of commercial seafood in 2016.
Walleye pollock continues as the big catch there.
Dutch Harbor's haul was worth $198 million in total, but that's down $20 million and 17 million pounds from the previous year. City officials blame the dip on a bad year for Bering Sea crab fisheries, which suffered slashed quotas and canceled seasons. They say Unalaska's budget has already taken a small hit. Meanwhile, Alaska continues to lead all other states in commercial landings. Alaska fishermen brought in 5.6 billion pounds of seafood, more than half the national total. Fairbanks North Star Borough Mayor Carl Castle says most of the borough's 250 or so buildings are badly in need of maintenance. He says many are so old they just need to be torn down and replaced. And he says it'll cost nearly $400 million to catch up on that backlog. The mayor told a couple hundred area residents who showed up for two meetings last week that they and their local elected leaders will have to solve the problem, because it's unlikely the state will pay for much, if any, of that work. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
Castle says the Fairbanks North Star Borough and all other Alaska municipalities have for decades relied on the state to pay for building and maintaining local roads, schools, libraries, and just about all other public structures.
That's been our business model, and that's what's broken.
But the state's been cutting that funding since the price of oil began to nosedive 4 years ago, so much so that Castle says he expects little or no funding for either maintenance or capital projects in the years ahead.
Our business model is changing, and we have to change with that.
Castle told about 130 people who turned out for the first of two meetings at the Pioneer Park Exhibition Hall Wednesday that borough officials have tried to lessen the impact of the steady decrease in state funding by juggling funds and finding operational efficiencies while lobbying lawmakers and the governor to restore at least some funding.
We've just been sucking it up. How long can we do that? I'm telling you, we're at the end of the road. Okay?
The mayor says the backlog of some $389 million in deferred maintenance and capital project spending over the past 10 years, and the need to spend more than $1 billion over the next 20 years to replace the borough's aging structures, and the unlikelihood of state officials solving the problem anytime soon, all make it necessary for local officials and the residents they serve to take matters into their own hands.
We gotta sort this out. We got to sort it out soon because we're still digging a hole.
Which brought Castle to the inevitable question, how to pay for all that work. The mayor says budget cuts are inevitable, but he also says borough officials must consider boosting revenues and look at other strategies, such as issuing more bonds to finance construction.
We got to look at revenues, fees, taxes, the bad words. We got to look at that. We got to look at bonding. So we can bond things and stretch payments out.
The latter alternative appealed to Jerry Rafson, who sat in on the noon meeting.
I think the simplest way, in my mind, is to run out some bond issues, preferably individual facilities, and see what the voters vote for.
Bob Hildebrandt says he favors both cuts in services, such as closing one of the borough's three pools, and revenue increases.
I think maybe cutting some things and raising revenue, getting a balance in there, and see if we could work it out.
Hildebrandt says he opposes the borough tax cap, a voter-initiated limit on the amount of revenue the borough can collect, which must be reaffirmed by voters every 2 years. He says he'll vote against it in next year's local election. Linda File, who also attended the noon meeting, says she strongly believes the borough must boost revenues. File says voters should lift the borough's tax cap, and she says she'd pay higher user fees and a sales tax, as well as a state income tax.
I feel like it's a citizen's responsibility to contribute.
Castle says he'll convene more of the town hall-like meetings in the near future to talk with residents about other fiscal issues as he and his staff begin work on the coming fiscal year's budget. In Fairbanks, I'm Tim Ellis.
The Alaska School Activities Association has approved a request from the Juneau School District to combine its high school football teams and cheer squads beginning next fall. The request was approved at a meeting last week of the ASAA Board of Directors. It allows the district to combine the Juneau Douglas Crimson Bears and Thunder Mountain Falcons into one team. That means Thunder Mountain students will be able to play for Juneau Douglas while remaining enrolled at their own school. KTOO's Edlyn Baxter has more.
Director of Student Services Bridget Weiss said the district must wait for a decision on which conference the team will play in. The combined Thunder Mountain and Juneau Douglas student bodies will likely bump the team up a division.
Once we know what conference we're in, that will give us some information to start formulating, you know, what the season's going to look like, both fiscally and logistically.
Weiss said the primary reasons the district made its request had to do with safety and participation concerns. The number of students signing up to play football for both Juno teams has declined in recent years, forcing coaches to play younger, less experienced students against teams with older and larger players. Both teams were also operating at a deficit at the beginning of the 2017 season. TMHS had a negative account balance of more than $100,000, while JDHS was short almost $6,000. The sole vote against the motion came from Board Representative Andrew Frisky. Frisky is the residential and activities principal at Mount Edgecombe High School in Sitka and represents Region 5, which is Juneau's region. He said other schools in the region were concerned that Juneau's request would leave other teams at a disadvantage. In the past, schools traveling to play Juneau teams have then taken the ferry to play Ketchikan. Changing divisions would alter that, Frisky said.
Combining programs would cause them to possibly bump up into a large school division, leaving Ketchikan the only school down in Region 5. And I think that was the main reason why some 10 of the schools did not support this.
Executive Director of ASAA, Billy Strickland, said there was some concern at Thursday's meeting that this decision could set a precedent for other Alaska schools.
Other states for quite a while have had the ability for even their larger schools to co-op in order to save cost and so forth. So while it's precedent setting, I believe overall the board doesn't believe that is a bad thing.
Strickland added that the decision means the board will have to take a look at its classification system for high school football. ASAA currently has three divisions determined by school size, but it may need to adjust that in order to balance the number of schools at each level. Weiss pointed out that of the 20 schools in the Southeast region that weighed in on the school district's request, only three have football programs. Two of those are Juneau's. The other is Ketchikan.
And that speaks volumes to how challenging it is to find the capacity to run football out of Southeast Alaska.
She said the district will know which conference the team will play in later this month. In Juneau, I'm Madeline Baxter.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. We had reports tonight from Andrew Kitchenman, Jacob Resnick, and Adeline Baxter in Juneau, Dan Bross and Tim Ellis in Fairbanks, Catherine Rose in Sitka, Kayla DeRoche in Kodiak, Davis Hovey in Nome, and Laura Craigle in Unalaska. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, Wesley Early is our web editor, and I'm Laurie Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. Older Persons Action Group publishes Senior Voice, Alaska's only statewide publication for seniors, and is an excellent source of information for families and caregivers. SeniorVoiceAlaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG.
Colder temperatures are here, and the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation reminds you of the danger of carbon monoxide, a poisonous gas that you can't see or smell. If it builds up in your home, it can be deadly. Be safe this winter and have a qualified mechanic ensure your heating system is working properly. Never run your car in the garage or operate a portable generator in an enclosed space. Finally, always ensure your home has a working carbon monoxide detector. This message sponsored by AHFC. Open enrollment for the health insurance marketplace in Alaska is now through Friday, December 15th. Enrollment assistance is available and it's free. Visit getcoveredalaska.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Children's Trust.
From one end of Alaska to the other and everywhere in between, public media works to provide quality programming and statewide news you can count on and news you can trust. Whether you're listening at home, at work, or in the car, we're grateful to be a part of your day. Thank you for tuning in. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.